I started revisiting my passion for art as a way to express what was going on without words, that I didn't have to explain how I was feeling, because honestly, I didn't really know how I was feeling. I couldn't explain it because it's so ubiquitous. Like, grief is like physical, psychological, like there's so many pieces to grief and how it hits you. It does often defy words. I've learned to put language to my grief over time, but art and music and these nonverbal ways of expressing grief gave me a place and a space that I never had or that I didn't think I had. So the art came back to me.
Hi, welcome to this episode of Daring Dreams with your host, Haley Bowen. I am here today with the lovely Pam Pastrick, who has a very, very inspiring story. And we talk a lot about purpose here at the Daring Dreams podcast. And sometimes we have businesses that start out because of a purpose. And sometimes we have businesses that try to incorporate it later. And this business, it's a nonprofit, started out as a major labor of love, and it still is. And so I want to introduce you to Pam. Hi.
For having me.
You're welcome. So in this podcast, I really want to talk about nonprofits and specifically yours and a little bit of the marketing behind it. So let's get started with first, why don't you share with everybody what is the nonprofit that you started? What's it do? Who's it help? All that kind of beautiful information.
The nonprofit that I started is called Enby Copes, and its purpose is to support children and their families that are coping with the death of a family member. And this work started about 10 years ago under a different organization in the beginning, Camp Carey Society, because I had lost my son, Michael, in 2012. And what I found is that there weren't resources that were helpful or could help us in the way that we envisioned early on. So there was an opportunity to go to Vancouver with my family and attend a family retreat that was about 4 days long. And it was a very transformational experience. And I came back thinking, maybe I could do this. And do I have the capacity to do this? And is it, but I had that passion, I guess, for the work because of my lived experience of loss and my need to channel that grief that I had in a positive direction. So NB Copes was developed in 2020, just before COVID.
Okay.
And
Oh, so it's
it
more
was,
newer than I thought.
pardon me?
It's newer than I thought.
Right. And
Yeah.
but Camp Carey had been running, and I was the regional director for
Okay.
Camp Carey. I should say the Atlantic director. And so we transitioned from that organization that was based in BC and administered through BC to a local grassroots organization that I felt would engage more potential sponsors and board members. And really, we're small here in the East Coast. So I
Yeah.
felt to be successful in the long term that a local organization would be more effective.
Okay.
Yeah,
And
so
how
I've
has
been
that
at it
panned
for
out?
10 years, but NB Copes as a new organization started in 2020, and then we received charity status in 2021.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's great. Charity status. That's hard to do. So
Yeah.
tell me about like a little bit more about like what happens if like what exactly do for the grieving families?
So we intend to provide creative and holistic supports in a family-centered way in natural environments, a retreat model, so that families actually connect with other families who are going through grief and loss. And our hope, and what has been proven, I guess, through the work that we do, is that we create communities of support that are long term, rather than kind of go to a program or go to a service. We're trying to create this longer term community.
Yeah, because grief is not ever over, I don't think.
No, I think that's one of the maybe myths in society. I guess if you haven't experienced a close loss, that grief is somehow a series of stages or steps that we get through and then we go back to normal. But people that have lived through these types of losses know that grief morphs. It just kind of changes over time. And I would say that we develop better coping skills, hopefully, over time to integrate the loss into your life. But it is your story and it's a part of your story that isn't going away. So, for example, I just passed the 2 year mark of I had lost my husband 2 years ago. So I'm not a stranger to having loss in my life. It's just like a milestone. It's something that you know is coming and you have to move through it and you do it in the best way that you can. But certainly when you're surrounded by people that get it, there's a sense of comfort associated with it, that you're not alone in your loss. So I think with NB Copes, we've worked hard to fulfill that mission of people not feeling isolated in their grief.
Right. That's really good. I know the other thing that you do through MV Copes is you kind of take like you're an artist as well.
Yes.
And tell me a little bit about how you incorporate that passion, the art passion, into this. 'Cause I think it's really important that people incorporate what they're so passionate about into their businesses. So how did you incorporate that?
Well, it's interesting because I think a lot of artists are inclined when they're very young. So I was very inclined as a very young person around art, and it was part of my family. My father was involved in art, and my brother, we all had these interests. And as I developed, I kept doing art until my high school years. And then after high school, I deviated and became a nurse. I did my undergraduate degree in nursing, but my passion for art never waned. It's just that my life went in a different direction and I wasn't able to engage in art like I had wanted to, because life got really busy and it was like an add-on for my life. But interestingly, when I had this really significant loss in my life, I struggled with how I could get through that. Like, how was I ever going to cope with such a life-shattering event? And I didn't feel I was equipped to. And I think a lot of people feel that way. You just feel like you're never going to get through it, and how will you get through it? And there's no recipe and there's no fix for this type of loss. I started through going to that retreat with my family, I started revisiting my passion for art as a way to express what was going on without words, that I didn't have to explain how I was feeling, because honestly, I didn't really know how I was feeling. I couldn't explain it because it's so ubiquitous. Like, grief is like physical, psychological. Like, there's so many pieces to grief and how it hits you that it does often defy words. I've learned to put language to my grief over time, but art and music and these nonverbal ways of expressing grief gave me a place and a space that I never had or that I didn't think I had. So the art came back to me, right? And it was a way that I could navigate these things. So I started, painting and drawing, and I sculpt and doing all kinds of mediums. But I also decided that if I was going to help the organization grow, that I would need to be equipped. And we don't have a lot of art therapists in our province, very few art therapists. There are people that use art as therapy, but art therapy is actually psychotherapy. So it is a specialty. And I felt, you know what, I could really contribute to the organization by having that expertise. And so I started my graduate studies through Toronto Art Therapy Institute. It was a lot of convincing. people that this type of service was needed, or that it wasn't a replication of an existing service, that it was different and that it offered, it filled a gap somewhere in the services in the area. And also, I think we're a society that sometimes thinks that, okay, you've had a loss in your life, lots of people lose people, you'll be okay. And so sometimes there's a sense that it's a part of life and that, you know, you don't really need any support or you're fine. But we know from a research perspective that youth and children in particular are very vulnerable to these life events, and it can have very adverse effects on their mental health. But it was a matter of trying to bring that evidence forward, to explain to people that the service was needed, and really finding some key people. And I happened to find two key people that I knew that could maybe help me to push the agenda and help me to get some initial funding to pilot the project. Okay. So I was able to find two people that said, you know what? Yeah, you're right. We should do this. It was actually Yenna Hurley and Jason Downey that, okay, you know, they were doing work with the board of directors at the regional through the Mind Care initiative. That's not there anymore, but it was linking it to mental health and youth mental health. And this would have been in 2014. So, you know, 10 years ago, really trying to push that agenda around mental health. And we just developed a little committee, and I wrote a proposal, and certainly had a great deal of support from the Camp Carry organization that I was with before, because they were the leaders in this work. And I was trying to develop that work here. So I would say it was very challenging to try and get people to buy into the concept of this work. And right. I had to prepare myself for people saying no to me fairly often, you know, just.
And that would be very difficult. Like, it's hard to hear that on the best of days, but when it's something so close.
Well, this is it. When it's something so personal, I had to just put that aside or bracket it somehow, because the mission was to create something bigger than my experience. It wasn't about me. It was about the need for the work and a greater purpose. So I had to try and separate myself from the bigger cause and just be thick-skinned about it. If people just, you know, and not because people didn't support the cause either. I shouldn't say that, because everyone could agree that, oh, this is a really great idea, but we already support this, but we've already used our money for the year. But right?
Yeah. There's so many good causes.
Really good causes and necessary work that needs to be done. So when you're a new person on the block and you're competing with amazing organizations that need the funding, how are you going to make yourself noticed that it is important work? So I think finding some key players early on was helpful, and also just spread and span. You just get yourself out there, talk to as many people as you can, tell them your story, even if they don't want to hear it sometimes. Approach people and don't be afraid. If they don't have time or they're not interested, then so be it. Then go on to the next person. I mean, I think it took a lot of patience and persistence. And
so did you do that through networking events?
Pardon me?
Like, did you seek out networking events, and like, or did you just talk to people that you already knew, or like, who did you talk to? How did you find them?
I did talk to anybody in healthcare that I knew. I talked to anybody in mental health that I knew. I approached people about the need for the work. So I guess I did attend some of the women's in business events early on as well. It's a bit challenging. Nonprofit charity versus business, they run similar, but their purposes are different in the sense that you're not here to make money. You're here to raise money to implement. You have this all those restrictions around the CRA and the taxation and the gifting and the, all of these things. So I certainly did talk to people that were in charities, that were running charities, like once we started NB Coates, because prior to that, Camp Carey was handling most of that and they would have known all of the rules around CRA and things like that. But when I had to do it myself, I had to go find people that knew about it. So I think I went to talk to Sharon Amaro at Family Solutions.
Yeah.
And because I had sat on the board of First Steps a while back. And I knew Sharon. She was the ED there. So I said, okay, I know someone. I know someone that can talk to me about this. So, you know, just talking to people that had the expertise, I had to do a lot of work around understanding the CRA and what the requirements were for a charity. The charity application process was, you know, significant. But when I wrote, I knew what I was writing for. I knew what it was about by that time because I had been doing work with Camp Carey and I had a pretty clear vision and we actually got charity status in a very short period of time.
Oh, that's good.
And we were lucky that way. And I think that helped us to further the work. Otherwise, you're waiting. You can't apply for funding. Like you can't, that's the thing with charities. You can't generate income other than fundraising.
Right.
Fundraising during COVID would have been like, I don't even know what the analogy would be.
Yeah.
But you would not.
Fundraising for an event.
For an event, which right? No one could go to.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So it might have been a good time to do all the legwork.
It wasn't. You started, right? So there were challenges and we had some early partners. So you can, if you don't have charity status, you can partner with someone who has charity status.
Oh.
So that they would do the administrative piece of it and you would do the programming. So Boys and Girls Club, for example,
yeah.
Prior to charity status, we partnered with them to deliver programming for kids at the Boys and Girls Club. And we were able to start then so that when we got to the point where we have to apply for charity status, the evidence of the effectiveness of our work was more obvious. And we had partnerships, people that believed in the work.
Right.
So I think it is a lot about finding the right people that will support the work that you're doing and then just asking and keep asking.
Yeah. And having thick skin.
and don't get discouraged. But I think if you have a passion for the work that you do, I think it would take an awful lot to get you discouraged.
Yeah.
So for me, I used to worry that, oh, it's kind of like I'm going to do this work and then I'm going to get a little bored of it or it's not going to light my fire anymore or whatever. But that has never happened. So I think to believe in the longevity of your purpose, that you're going to grow with it, right? It's going to morph, it's going to change, and you're going to find ways to be innovative and creative and make it continue to be your passion.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're working full time as well. Like this is.
I do. Yeah. So, I mean, you can imagine we do thankfully have an admin person now that's paid. We are applying. We do have some funding, hopefully, for an executive director, which won't be me. I sit on the chair of the board of directors and provide that sort of direction around the organization. But I don't have any need or desire to do daily work of the organization. Yeah. And we have great people associated with MB Copes. There's interest there. So yes. I do work full time, but I have been able to still fulfill my passion for the work and make it, you know, keep it going. But it's growing.
That's so inspiring. It's growing, it's so inspiring.
Yeah.
Yeah. It gets me right in the heart when people just are so generous with their time because they know how important it is.
It's really, you know, what's really strange about this work is I've done all kinds of different jobs and work, and I've always thought I've defined it as an end goal. I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But the work of MB Copes is very, very different for me. It's not really work. It's like rooted in my life, my what's happened, and has helped me a lot. You know, I mean, I don't see it as anything else other than, I guess, my purpose of what I need to do. Yeah. But people need to get paid eventually.
Yes.
Or, I mean, I have been the person, I guess, that has taken the torch. But now we have a lot of people that are affiliated with MB Copes that help us. And it's a much bigger purpose now with a community of people. And I don't feel alone anymore. Originally, I did. That's a piece of advice I would say for people that are starting new projects or businesses. Just get comfortable feeling alone. Okay, this is my responsibility here.
A lot of my clients are solopreneurs or very small, and finding the people is the hardest. They come to me for marketing, but once the marketing works, they need the people, right? And it's hard to find the right people with the same passion, same vision, values. Like, it all matters because it's, you're building a family, right?
And, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I would say you might have to accept that no one's going to have that drive that you have. And if you're looking for someone to match your drive or your passion, then you may be looking in the wrong way.
You'd be alone a long time.
In the wrong direction. Because maybe you need to inspire. Maybe your job is to kind of inspire people to find their passion within the work rather than have the same level of commitment or passion or whatever it is. I think that's hard to do.
Yeah.
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 Don't you?
It definitely is.
Yeah. Yes. And I mean, if you do, like, great. If you do. I would say we have a core group of people now at MB Copes that are very committed and passionate about the work because of their lived experience. And we've all worked together now for a long time in the charity work. And we're very close and committed. Mm-hmm. So there are people out there, but it's just in the beginning, it's hard to find people that match that. And you may never find that. So don't get disappointed.
Right. But you can still find people to complement your skills, you know, and you can still find your team. But
yeah,
I think you're right. It is like nobody's going to care as much as the founder, really.
Well,
I don't
really,
think.
Right? And the thing is, what I want to do is inspire people to want to join in the work and then help the organization. I don't have all the skills and abilities and all of the things that it needs to run this organization. I never have.
You had what it needed to start.
To get it going, exactly. Yeah. I had what it needed to get it going. But honestly, I don't have what it needs to sustain it. Because that's a team. That's not an individual.
Yeah,
it's a team that runs an organization, not an individual. And it's building each other's capacities together and kind of saying, oh, who can do this? Who can do that? Can you do this? Can you do that? And us all working together, like collaboratively.
Yeah.
Right. And I, you know, MB Copes is at a point where we have strong collaborators, strong skills, and we can kind of fill in each other's gaps, so to speak.
Yeah. That's good. Mm-hmm. That's what you need. Yeah. So, tell me about like the moment that you were like, this is going to work. Like, this is going to happen. Cause I know, like, it's so hard as when you're starting out something to like, is this going to get traction? Is this going to work? Is this like, is all this effort going to pay off?
Do you have a moment? First time I knew that we were going to do something was we received a $10,000 grant from MindCare. And I was like, oh my goodness. Like, that's enough that we can raise the rest. We can raise the rest of the money to be able to run a family retreat. And if we can just do that, then we can show people, you know, most importantly, the families, that this work is important and that that will generate more interest and revenue and credibility, I guess, for the organization. So it would have been that first 10 grand.
Yeah.
Like, whoop, whoop.
Yeah. That,
I was pretty excited.
That, yeah, that's amazing. That's really good.
Yeah.
And so then you ran it. And so how many retreats have you done so far? Because I know you started through COVID, so.
Yeah, so 1, 2, 3, 4. I think we're doing our fourth family retreat for general loss. We did a family retreat for suicide loss last spring. That was new, and that was a collaboration with Maddie Murphy Memorial Fund and St. John's Suicide Prevention and the Children's Grief Foundation of Canada. So it's kind of like a collaboration there of funding. Yeah. And then we've done probably 10 youth retreats, and those are weekend retreats for those aged 13 to 18. And those are very well attended and very positive feedback. We've also done Connection Day. So every Christmas we have Connection Day where all the families within our organization are invited to come. Typically, families come to retreats for 2 years, so they stay within our organization for 2 years. So they'll come to a retreat. The kids will often go to a youth retreat, come to Connection Days, come to another family retreat, and then they either feel satisfied with what they have received and they're good, or they become peer mentors. Okay. So some of the families become peer mentors. And we actually have a peer mentor that's on our board of directors now.
Wow.
So it's kind of, like I said, it's around building the community of support and getting people to kind of connect and continue the work together.
What would you say is the hardest thing from a marketing perspective for you?
We don't have any staff for marketing.
Oh, isn't that everybody?
Like, we don't have, our organization doesn't have the skill of a marketing person. So much of what we have done has been my very lame attempts at a website. I mean, it's okay, but I mean, think about my background. I don't really have those skills or the knowledge to do that. It's been okay up to this point. So marketing is challenging because of our lack of skill. And sometimes people will say, Envy Copes, what is that? We don't know, because we don't have a marketing person yet to be able to help us message, you know, Envy Copes. Right. Having said that, we just received a federal grant for $188,000, and that was in the fall.
Oh.
It was a community recovery grant, and we were thrilled to get that funding. It wasn't program funding, so it's very restricted.
Oh, okay.
But we had people to build the infrastructure of NB Copes, including marketing. So we have a team right now of people that are working on messaging, marketing, how do people, when they come and look at the website development, registration for programs, fundraising. Wow. We have someone that's working on a logo for us. Our logo's pretty good, but it's not transferable to, you know, traditional marketing things, like even printing and things are challenging with the logo we have.
Because it's so painted, we're looking right?
At, what's that?
It's hand painted. Is it?
Yeah, I did it.
Yeah.
So it looks okay, but in terms of printing that and replicating that on different things, which is very important for marketing, it's not great. The vector format, like all of that, it's not great. So we are lucky that we've been able to get some funding to develop some of that as well. And I'm looking forward to that project being completed and kind of seeing where we fall with that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. In a couple of years, I should interview you again and see what happened when your marketing was on par. Like, how did that change? So that would be a good interview. How did that change once all your marketing out?
I mean, it comes down to people being paid for the work that they're doing. Nothing is free.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, everything and everyone has very important work to do. So we have to pay people. It's people need income. They need livelihood. It can't be on the backs of volunteers to do this type of work. Volunteers are really good at giving a time and a place and an activity to do, but they have work and lives. They can't be doing marketing and all design and web design. That's not realistic. So I think with charities, that's where you can suffer, because it's hard to get funding to do those things.
Right. Yeah. And they are important if you want to, you know, that mass awareness and I'm sure you probably don't have an issue filling your programs.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So it's more on the side of getting the funding to run them and the support to run them.
Exactly. Because if nobody knows who you are, and then you are approaching businesses and corporations and kind of saying, oh, would you support us? They're like, well, who are you? What do you do? And going to the entrepreneurs that care, that was really helpful because you're presenting to business people. So then they know of you. And really with charity, usually it involves a third. So a third corporate, a third grants, and a third fundraising. That's been the traditional way that you generate revenue for program needs and whatnot, or organizational needs. But the marketing links to the corporate.
Right.
Really important. Yeah. It does link somewhat to just general fundraising, et cetera. People wanting to contribute to the cause, the messaging and the marketing, that's so critical, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Why would they write a check out to us if they don't know who we are and what we do and the impact that we make?
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I like to have, I think you're the second nonprofit that I've had on my show. And one of the reasons I love to do this is because through the work that I do, and you know, for those of you who are regular listeners, you'll know this, but we do purpose, right? And businesses need to incorporate some kind of good contribution to the world through their business. It's needed. There's lots of reasons. Go listen to those podcasts. Mm-hmm. But there's three ways that they do that. So one way, for these are for-profit businesses. One way they do it is they are a catalyst. So they inspire people through their words to make change, right? And so that would be like a big brand example of that would be like Apple. Right. So they're all about thinking different, and they think that the more people who think different, the better the world will be. Right. Mm-hmm. And so there's catalysts, there's trailblazers who are the ones who see like massive injustice in something and they are out to fix an injustice. Mm-hmm. But then there's the activators, and the activators are the ones who are a little bit more impatient, I would say. Like actions speak louder than words to them. So they want to weave in some kind of giving into the fabric of their business. So this is like the Tom shoes, buy one, give one, those kind of things. And when activator brands and businesses hear about charities that they think are good causes and that align with who they are, it becomes, how do I now weave this into my business so I can give ongoing to that charity and help that charity to do the good work that they do. And so that's why I like to bring charities into this, because, or like nonprofits, because sometimes businesses don't know what's out there. And maybe there is another business owner who is very aligned with what you're doing and they just need to hear about it, right? And and then they can figure out the creative way to be able to contribute by weaving it into their business. Instead of it being like a check for writing and a separate line item, which is good too. But when you can weave it into the business and have your client or customers and clients understand that you buy from me, you're also supporting this. It's really important. So that's one of the main reasons I love to bring on people like you with inspiring stories, and hopes that, you know, somebody listening will be like, I want to be part of that. So. How can people be part of that for you?
Right.
Like, how do they reach you? What's your website? Like, what is the what do they need to know if they want to reach out to you? Whether it's for corporate donation or for like participating. And
I mean, we volunteers, or some people like to volunteer things, or maybe they have a service. They may have to donate art supplies. Maybe they want to partner with us or offer a service that we're not, that would be helpful for us. Like, I don't know, we have people from all over. We do mindfulness and Reiki and yoga and equine therapy and art therapy, music, recreation. We do a lot of things. So what happens is people that run their own businesses come and volunteer with us. And they receive an honorarium for coming. Usually if they're in a leadership role, they receive an honorarium, but they become a source of help for us too, in the sense that if people need individual work or they need, we have referral source, right?
Right. What is, what do you mean they receive an honorarium? What does that mean?
It means like if they did a 4-day retreat, they would get $500.
Okay.
It's not a lot of money. It's
okay.
It's
like just some kind of,
it's just more like a thank you, let's say.
Right.
But it's not, what their contract hourly wage, because we don't have enough money for that. We don't, we, you know, someday maybe we will, but right now it's more people come and volunteer and the professional volunteers get honorariums.
Okay.
But they also, you know, we don't promote the businesses or anything, but they're people that come that are, they have a business. So if we need to make referrals to anybody, we know more people that we can refer clients to, because we don't offer individual therapy. That's not our mandate. It is group retreats, building communities of support. That's our work, but we have expertise therapists that offer one-on-one.
It's nice to see the community supporting causes like this.
Right.
I think that was a really great interview. Thank you so much for being part of this podcast, and for being part of our community, and for doing the good work that you're doing, and like having the grit to keep going with it. So thank you so much.
I'm not alone anymore. And that is the biggest gift. I don't have to say, I used to, for a long time, I used to say, well, when we do this and we do that, and my late husband used to say, Pam, you're we. No, we.
You cannot believe how many times I have that conversation with people, because people are like, what do I put, if it's a solopreneur, they're like, what do I put on my website? Do I put I, do I put we, do like, how do I do this and be honest? Because if it is just me, and what does that do to my brand? So
I yeah, mean, and I used to say we sound everybody. So much better. We, but yeah. I think it's because if you set an intention and your vision is we,
yes,
you are we, and it's just a matter of yeah. time before.
And you were alone, but you were never alone because there's no way you could ever run at an event and just be an I.
No.
Right?
No.
So there maybe wasn't somebody in the day-to-day, but collective, you were a we. You were always a we.
Yes. Yeah. There. I always felt like if I had support, if I didn't feel that I had support, I mean, if anything, I had my family and my yeah. family, my siblings. One of my siblings, Susan, is a social worker, a lot of expertise. My other sibling was an RN. Like, and my other sibling had some, our first family retreat, my whole family volunteered. They came.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing, really. Because maybe it was part of supporting me with my grief, because maybe they thought I'd lost my mom. Just help her. She needs help.
Yeah.
But they showed up, you know? And so my family showed up for me, and they continue to, in the beginning, and to allow me to fulfill that first family retreat that we had. They were a very big part of it. So I guess there was never an I, there was always a we, you know, you have to find who those people are who are going to stick with you and support you.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And with that, we will conclude this episode, and we'll see you next time.
Yes. Thank you for your time.
You are welcome.